Welcome to Police Commissioner Batts. Good to have you with us.
Thank you, kind sir. And I promise not to do any Gregorian chants while I'm here.
If you're good at it, I'd love to hear it.
No, sir. Thanks for having me.
Good to have you here. 410-319-8888 is the number here. We'll get to the calls to Wanda, George, and Russ. Well, the first callers up, we have some tweets to read as well. So all that will be coming in, 410-319-8888. Let me let you weigh – let's slide in this a little easy before we get into some of the tougher issues that we
sure.
face and that you face as mm-hmm. commissioner. The curfew issue is going to be voted on.
Mm-hmm.
As a police officer, the FOP has come out against the curfew.
No, they changed their stance. They say they support it now.
They support it now.
Yep.
Does that mean you support it now as well? And if you do, why?
Well, I come from an area that has had curfews for decades, so it's nothing that's unusual. And what curfews are, and you have to explain it to people, is it doesn't mean that kids can't be out on the street. Where I come from, the curfew is at 10 o'clock at night. And basically, that means that kids have to be moving. Either they have to be on their way coming home from work or going to work, hopefully coming home from work, or going to a party or being out in the presence of an adult. As I was sharing, as I was raised by Southern parents that basically had a rule when the sun went down, you had to be in the house. And it keeps kids out of harm's way. It doesn't say that kids are the problem. It just keeps them out of harm's way. We have a curfew in Baltimore here. We've had a curfew for years. It happens to be 12 o'clock at night. The discussion is, do you move it up to 11 o'clock, 10 o'clock, or 9 o'clock? So it's nothing new that we don't have. Also, we're taking it from a point of view that if you see a child who's out at 1 o'clock at night, and when I say child is anyone under the legal age of being an adult who's out at 1 o'clock a.m. in the morning, hypothetically, I think that's a signal, number one, that the child's probably not going to school on a weeknight. Number two, that there's probably trauma or problems within that family. And so what we're looking at is not to grab that child and lock him up and throw him into prison. What we're looking at is trying to do wraparound services. Take the child off the street, get him into a location where they're not in danger or in harm, and try to identify the family and do wraparound services for the family. So we're looking at it as a city, as a positive, to get that child back into school where their greatest amount of hope is education.
So the two quick questions on that, then we'll go to another subject. Most of the studies that the academic studies have been written on curfew show they have very little effect on affecting crime or anything else like that, A. And B, those wraparound services, we don't exist in Baltimore City. We don't have the money for them. They don't have 24-hour setups. There's no places to take kids. And C, should the police be spending their time doing that rather than really dealing with issues of serious crime that face the city?
Some of the journals that I've read on dealing with curfews are not specified articles. It depends on what the variables that you're looking at in that particular article that have popped up over the years. And it's not looking to address crime. Much like I said, it's not the thing to say that kids are responsible for the crime. It's keeping our young people safe. In many locations where we have sales of alcohols, for my personal feeling is there's no reason why you should have underage kids around where grown men are who are drinking alcohol or where clubs and different events are. I think that's just a recipe for danger as a whole. There's times that I drive down in different parts of the city at 1 to 2 o'clock in the morning, and I see groups of young people out. That's just a recipe for disaster. My grandfather, who never graduated from college, never went to college, had a lot of very wise sayings, and he said nothing good happens after 11 o'clock at night. And he was a very wise man, and I think that also goes with young people. We're trying to protect our people. We do have locations to – we have a curfew center right now. We've had curfew center here for many years here in Baltimore where we drop off.
That's not very functional, though.
Well, it does work. And what the purpose is to call parents and to have parents come pick the child up. Now, I'll take that functional curfew center over having a child out on the street at 2 o'clock in the morning where they could be at risk or at harm. So I'll take that. And we do have wraparound services as a matter of finding the grants and the funding to make those programs go. And I just will not take no for an answer to say that we can't do better. We can do better. We should do better for our children. And our bottom line is making hope for our young people so they are successful, not to put things in a way where they go the wrong way. And that's what kids tend to do, period, any child.
We're going to open the phone to you in just a minute. It's now about 9:20, and Commissioner Batts is here like 9:45, so we want to make sure that you get your calls in here. And have your questions answered at 410-319-8888. Let me throw another question here before we get to the phones and let people raise some issues. One of the questions that people talk about is what was going to go on with Officer William Scott Kern, who, and the question of what you found out about commanders not being aware the facility was open, that we didn't have permission to use a state-owned site, whether or not he was supposed to be carrying a gun when the gun fired and shot. What conclusion have you come to?
There's no conclusions that we can talk about at this given point in time. That is an open investigation. It is in the state's attorney's office for Baltimore County. While that's an investigation, I'm not in a position to comment on those things. It may impact the filing of the case. Matter of fact, I think there was a grand jury indictment that is in the process of that. I think in a short amount of time, hopefully, the system moves very quickly that we have a resolution of that so we can talk about
it. You can't even talk about whether or not there's a policy that says that whether or not you're allowed to use state property and whether people should be on state property and how training should be conducted and where and who knows what?
Well, I'm not going to talk about the case as a whole. However, when we have command officers that have command responsibilities of different functions, they are supposed to authorize or not authorize the permission of recruits leaving academy grounds. That's something that comes with any academy and any responsibility, whether it's a high-level executive to or supervisor. That's why I put them in positions to make sure that we take care of our recruits and make sure that they're safe overall. So we don't have specific policies, but there's the general things that you just have general responsibility and that you have accountability.
So you're now going to have a shakeup in that whole training department? Is that going to change? What's it going to change?
That I took care of changing that and addressing that the day after. I did. I relieved the entire chain of command of their duties. I have replaced that chain of command, and we will continue to bring the best and brightest into our academy.
I have some more questions about that, especially given an FOP report that I wanted to ask about. But let's go to the phones first, if we might, just get some callers in here to start with between our questions. 410-31, and if you have headphones, you can listen in. Again, I guess in the studio, you can see what our listeners are saying. 410-319-8888 is the number here. And you can write to us at steinershow@gmail.com. I'll check on emails. I see a couple of tweets here, at Mark Steiner, and we'll check on the Facebook pages in a moment. 410-319-8888. Tawanda, you're on the air.
Good morning.
Good morning. Welcome.
Good morning. And I wanted to say good morning to Commissioner Bass. How are you?
Good morning, ma'am.
All right. And I met with you last night at the town hall meeting. I'm Tyrone West's sister.
Yes, ma'am.
And he was brutally murdered on July the 18th by the Baltimore City Police Department, 10 officers. But first of all, I wanted to say something about, you were talking about the curfew law and things that's been in place that you're trying to enforce and whatnot. I agree with the curfew thing because the way my mom and brought us up, we had to abide by a curfew because we had to think where's though when the street light came going, it was time for us to go.
Yeah, amen. That's right.
So that definitely kept us safe and out of trouble and whatnot. But my problem with the whole thing now, with looking at the way it used to be several years ago and whatnot, and seeing all the deaths that are at, you know, that are on the police hands. And it's sad, like, at first we used to be like the creeps come out at night, and that's what you were worried about. But now you're more so worried about, and I have young sons, now I'm more so worried about, you know, thank God they don't go out or hang out like that, you know. But my problem, my biggest fear is I'm worried about the same thing happening to them that happened to my brother. You know, it's just like, okay, so now instead of you worrying about bad guys, you're worrying about bad cops, you know, and it's just really sad. And I just pray to God that my brother get justice in this case, you know, and that y'all go over every detail, dot every I, cross every T, because nobody deserves to be brutally murdered. No one.
Commissioner.
I agree with her comments. The fact that we had a very good meeting last night where our citizens who pay our salaries came out and shared that they had a number of concerns and that we listened very intently. And part of what I shared with them last night is my dedication to turning around the public perception of the Baltimore Police Department. I want this police department to be seen not only as the largest police department in Maryland, but the best police department in Maryland and the best police department in the United States. And from a number of scandals and other issues that historically we've had here in the city of Baltimore, we've come in with a plan to reform, change, and shift and bring out the pride and excellence of the Baltimore organization. And that starts with, number one, listening. We had a very tough session last night. We had a lot of honesty. We had a lot of openness. And I think that's the beginning of change. We have to listen to our constituents. We have to listen. We have to change, and we have to adapt. And so the things that she is saying, which I agree with, she says make sure that every T is crossed, every I is dotted. We will ensure that. We will ensure that we have an open and transparent investigation. And we'll bring people in from the outside who are experts so you just don't hear from us, because part of the concern is, are we going to circle the wagons and not tell the truth? And I think it behooves not only the police officers that were part of that incident, which have a cloud over their head so they have a chance to tell their story, as well as witnesses who saw the incident, and to bring all of that out and make sure that we know what truly happened out there. And the biggest thing is I have to say to the West family, and I said last night, my condolences. And what I say clearly, and I made this point to all my officers when I stand in front of them, we have to have a reverence for life. And so when we come into contact in any situation, I want everyone to go home. I want those officers to go home safely with the diligent hard work that they do. I want citizens who we interact with and maybe have to arrest at times to go home safely. And then there's times that we have to use force in different situations, and hopefully it's done appropriately, and that everyone, every life that is engaged goes home safely, and that is my goal.
Well, let me ask this question. I want to get a lot of callers here, and I promise I'll turn this over to you all in just a minute. So in the last 25 minutes or so we have in this conversation, you will have the floor. But pushing a little bit more on what Tawanda was saying about Tyrone and some others, I was reading last night, I spoke with Bob Cherry yesterday, who's the president of the Fraternal Order of Police, and we talked about his the Blueprint for Improved Policing that they put out in July 2012, which we had a program about, a couple of them back then. One of the things in that blueprint, and I'll have another question about that in a little bit, but one of the questions in the blueprint was that it's important to start thinking about hiring police officers who either have spent a lot of time in the military, who have 2 years of college, who have a more comprehensive background check, because there is something going on with, let me be very clear, I'm not talking about every officer in the Baltimore City Police Department, but there's something that happens. A lot of violence has taken place by police officers towards citizens in this city. We've all seen it. Most of us have seen it or been affected by it. And that some people put that in its core at kind of a culture that you have to change. But B, part of changing that culture is part of what's in this Blueprint for Improved Policing, which is the kind of people that are recruited to be police officers, where they live, and how they're educated.
Well, I think you have a lot of debates on that. You have, and Bob Sherry is a good example of someone who's been around for, I think Bob's been about 15, 16 years, and Bob doesn't have those problems, and he came through the same recruiting mechanisms like everyone else. There's a lot of good officers on the Baltimore Police Department that have a great sense of pride. But it's multiple levels. Number one, from my standpoint, as coming from the outside, is that there's been, and you just said it, there's been years of conduct that has been accepted or allowed or continues. So there has been a history. So that tells you that there's a culture there and that you have to shift and change that culture. Culture doesn't change overnight. You didn't get here overnight. It won't change overnight, but you have to put those pieces in to start making a change. He is correct in the stance that you have to start with the front end, but I think you have to start with the front end, and how we pay our police officers is our number one thing. Baltimore City Police Department is one of the lowest paid in the state, and I am very open about that. I think you have to pay for what you want on your organization. So to get the best and the brightest, you have to pay for the best and the brightest to come to the organization. And let me finish here. And also, you also have to raise the standards, which is what I'm doing. Not only hiring standards you have to raise your promotional standards. You have to raise the standards of conduct. You have to raise overall standards and a level of pride. These are all the things that we're putting into place. What I shared last night is that we actually have an 80-point plan that we have put together to do reform within the organization as a whole. And part of what I'm working with President Cherry in FOP is how we address our discipline system, make it faster, make it quicker. One of the issues that came up last night is why does it take so long through the process when you have alleged misconduct. And part of what we're trying to do as we raise the hiring standards, we raise the promotional standards, we raise overall standards in the organization is to try to win the public trust back by, one, engaging the community and being open. But number two, when we have alleged misconduct, we got to do it faster, quicker, and to report back to the community that we have addressed it. We have some discipline cases here that take, you know, over a year. And that's ridiculous, the amount of time that it plugs through. So I think those are the pieces. It's just not just hiring someone who has military experience. It's just not hiring someone that may have college, although those things are positive. It's an entire system that you have to change and adapt, and we'll do it arm in arm with the FOP.
410-319-8888. George, you're on the air.
And Mark.
Good morning, George. Morning. Good morning.
Good morning, Commissioner Betts. How are you, sir?
Good morning, Mark.
Commissioner Betts, I was at the town hall meeting.
Yes, sir.
And first off and foremost, I would like to commend you for showing up and addressing the public on the certain issues that they're faced with the police department. It took courage in you because you took the brunt. I mean, you actually took the brunt of all the frustrations that the families shared regarding the Baltimore City Police Department.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
And I have to thank you for that.
However,
in light of that, when you took office, you inherited some major problems facing the Baltimore City Police Department.
Yes, sir.
And in your remarks last night, you stated on more than five occasions that the reverence of death was very, very important.
A reverence for human life.
Yes, yes. But in my case, I'm talking about a reverence of death because I wanted to be specific in what I'm talking to you about.
Mm-hmm.
I am the uncle of Tyrone West.
Yes, sir.
And there was a question addressed to you last night, which was not answered. And that was Baltimore City Police Department go through specific training in regard to the use of force, specific training. And there's no doubt that you allow officers to come on the street without that training. Is that correct?
No, sir.
So to answer what George was saying, so what is it? I mean, one of the things we had the state's attorney on here. I asked a similar question that George just asked about what is excessive force and how do you judge that when we talked about the death of Anthony Anderson, whether or not somebody having broken ribs is excessive force. How do you define excessive force?
Well, there's a couple things. First of all, I can't talk about the Anthony Anderson case nor the Tyrone West case. Anthony Anderson actually occurred a week prior to my arrival. I got off the airplane, and actually one of the first things that I did was start addressing that issue within hours of even stepping into my office. And Mr. Tyrone West was a confrontation that officers had in the month of July, 2013. And both those cases are under review at this point in time. I surmise the Anthony Anderson case will be concluded fairly soon in the very near future. And Mr. West's case is under the auspices of the state's attorney's office, so I cannot comment on those. I think how in a national standard, as you talk about excessive force, how you define it, you're a police officer is supposed to use the amount of force which is reasonable to overcome the force that is being pushed in the opposite direction. So if you use force that is over and above, that would be considered from a reasonable person standpoint as being excessive. But, you know, some of the things that we're trying to do at this point in time, I mean, I guess going back to the question was, do we send officers out there who haven't done the training?
Right.
There are state mandates that say exactly how much training that we're supposed to do with police officers. That's regulated by our academy from a rookie standpoint, or recruits or cadets, I should say, as well as advanced officers training. And we're up to standard, and in categories we far exceed in other standards. So we're audited on those standards by the state on a regular basis. We just had them come in not too long ago this year, and we meet all those standards. So, no, we're not sending officers out without training. We are meeting the state mandates. We're exceeding in some areas on the state mandates. But, you know, what I'd like to do even further than that is make sure that our officers have all the equipment that they need to get the job done. As I've said on other radio stations during interviews, is that I am a big proponent of tasers. There are some misunderstandings with tasers. As I've used them in other organizations, it's not electrocuting people. What it does is sends a shock that causes the muscles to contract between two prongs. If you fire the taser, one prong may hit the upper part of your chest. The other prong would hit the lower part of your abdomen. And so it would cause your muscles between your chest and your abdomen to contract, which just takes you to the ground. And no harm is done to you. You can be handcuffed. What I found when I brought them to other organizations that I've been in charge of is that the injuries to citizens go down dramatically. Injuries to police officers go down dramatically, and there's no harm that takes place. So those are things that we're trying to outfit the organization with. Less lethal options are things that we're going to look for. The reality, there's times that we have to use force. And by law, legally, we're able to use force. It's that we use it in a professional manner to the limit, and that we make sure, and like I said, have a reverence for life is number one where we start, and make sure that everybody goes home from those encounters.
We have to take a very brief break. And we come back, I apologize to the listeners who hung up, but Curtis, if you call back, we'll get your call. We are going to go to Russ, Gary, Tyrone in that order and read these tweets as well as try to get another question here that came out of Justin Fenton's article. Stay with us as we talk with Commissioner Betts. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner. I'm here with Commissioner Betts, of course, Commissioner of the Baltimore City Police Department, Anthony Betts, 410-319-8888. We just talked during the break about some things he wants to bring up. We want to get as many callers in here that we can get in as well. And we're negotiating now to make sure that when Commission comes back, it's for a longer period so we can get everything in we have to get in. 410-319-8888. Commissioner, in fairness, let me get to this caller, and then I'll want to talk about that man's face you have staring up from the page.
Well, yeah, that's a lot of things. That's our public enemy number one, Christopher Good, and I'd like to talk a little bit about crime also and what's going on in the city.
So, Russ, you're on the air.
Greetings, Mark, to you and the commissioner.
Welcome.
Good morning.
Commissioner, I'd like to start the same way that I did with your predecessor on the occasions I had to talk to him.
And was that a kind way?
I'm going to let you be the judge.
Okay.
I'm speaking to a former military man who has expanded control of troops over a 21-and-a-half-year period. And what I said to your predecessor simply is, unless and until the Baltimore City Police Department becomes an integral thread in the fabric of the community, they cannot accomplish their mission.
Agreed.
What I mean by that, real simple, is the way the Baltimore City Police Department is arrayed, you have a cavalry force. You have a 911 system. You're riding to the sound of the guns. When you get a call, that incident has occurred or is in progress, etc. You need to be ahead of the curve. You need, not as an occupying army, but you need an infantry-type system that takes and holds ground, where you have your soldiers, your troops, out there every day, 8 hours a day, 12 hours if necessary, to go to two shifts, as an infantry operation. Right now, if I'm standing in the corner of my neighborhood and I'm talking to a police officer, you know what the people around me are thinking? That I'm snitching. Because there is no rapport like that between the average police officer and the average citizen in this town. And so you need to break that all up. If you've got guys walking the beat every day, getting to know who is who, why is Mrs. Jones' door open when she's 92 years old and there's nobody supposed to be there now, you're going to get an enormous amount of feedback in the way of intelligence. And as you and I both know, intelligence is the key, it's the lifeblood to an operation like ours.
Okay.
And when you start getting that, then you'll know that this gang is beefing with this gang. Because we don't have gangs in the sense that they wear colors and they're fighting over turf so far as what they control. We have crews. They're drug crews. And their whole turf idea is the place where they sell their drugs, their strip. That's what they're fighting about. You would know when these beefs are going on, and you would be able to get your forces arrayed properly.
Russ, we only have like 15 more minutes for the commissioner, so I'm going to let him kind of respond so we can get some callers in here. But
yeah, is it Russ?
Russ, it's Russ, yeah.
Russ, I thank you for your call. I think in many ways you've been reading my playbook. You're Very correct. I won't use the metaphoric references for the military that you have from the cavalry and the infantry, because we're not an occupying army. And we do need to have a better relationship within our community. And part of what the families were sharing last night is a lack of trust within the police organization on a lot of different levels. That trust comes from being a part of the community, part of the fabric, everything that you're saying. I will disagree with you on the fact that we don't have gangs. We do have gangs here in the city of Baltimore. We have gangs. We have groups. We also have crews, too, that deal with drugs. But we have gangs like the Black Guerrilla Family or Treetop Piru or the Watts Crips. Those are all gangs that I've been dealing with for 30 years that come out of South Central Los Angeles. So we do have them here. But your cornerstone of what you're saying, absolutely right. We'll get more intelligence when we have a better relationship with our community, and that's what we're pushing for.
So before we go to Gary, our next caller up, let's start with
that. Yes, a couple things that I wanted to share is the fact of what we're doing to address exactly what Russ was talking about. Our cornerstones on what we're addressing is gangs and guns. And so we are focusing on gangs. We are moving towards another pillar. We have five pillars. Gangs and guns are pillar one. Pillar two is community engagement, much like Russ said. Pillar three is building actionable, fast intelligence, much like Russ said. Pillar four is automating our organization that has technology from probably the 1980s. And our fifth pillar is building an organization that is strong on ethics, integrity, and accountability, which is what the families were saying last night. So what I'm trying to say by the pillars that we're building, we hear the community. We hear our mandates. We hear what's been said. And these are becoming the imperatives of our organization. Just quickly on crime, because we don't get to share so much on the accomplishments that are happening. As of today, our homicide rate is 2% above what it was last year and heading in the correct direction. If you look at homicides overall in the last 7 days, our homicides are gone down 50% over last year. In the last 14-day period, our homicides have gone down 62% over last year. And in 28 days, in a month, they've gone down in about 15%. All of that to say, what a lot of stats is, we're going in the right direction. Our violent crime in the city is down 6%. Our property crime in our city overall is down 3%. And our total crime in the city is down 4%. So what you're hearing is a message that we don't have the opportunity to get out so much, because it tends to be sometimes a sense of fear that's put out in our community. Baltimore is a good city. It's a good place. This is where we live. This is where we work. And it's trending in the right direction. And we're building a police department that you're going to be proud of.
Very quickly, the most wanted man.
Christopher Troy Good. He's African-American male. His date of birth is September 9th of 1987. He's wanted for attempted murder, domestic violence. He's considered armed and extremely dangerous. He had one lady who was the mother of his child, to which he did or alleged to have done very violent acts of cutting her throat, stabbing her multiple times. He is a very dangerous person who's thought to be in our community. You will see him on TV. We have flyers that are out. Please give us a call to notify us. It's 1-866-7-LOCKUP.
410-319-8888 is the number here. Let me a tweet just came in, if you might. Let me just ask this question. And it said, we received information that the Baltimore City Police Department officer Nicholas David Chapman was involved with Tyrone West and Anthony Anderson's killing. Why wasn't he removed from the force after the death of Anthony Anderson? That's been a real controversy.
That's incorrect information.
So that's why, because this scam has come up when the state's attorney was here. He got very upset when it was raised.
It's misinformation.
There were no officers involved in both.
No. What I'm told is that's not correct by my internal affairs people. The officers, when they're involved in an incident of that magnitude, they're put on what is called suspension. And what suspension is that you bring them inside, you put them on a desk job, you take their badge, you take their ID. They don't have police powers. And they're inside. So, no, that's not the case.
But no officers were involved in both situations?
The officer that was identified was not involved in both those situations, no.
So they're saying that, I just want to make it clear. So definitely there were no officers involved in both situations.
I cannot sit here today and tell you no officers. The officers who were involved in the Anderson case that were named, there was two officers that were brought out. Neither one of those officers were involved in the second incident.
410-319-8888. Gary in Baltimore, you're on the air.
Hi, I'm a 60-year-old active member of the Baltimore City Fire Department. And 23 years I've been in the fire department. Almost became a member of the police department for a negative circumstance that happened in 1978. But I've had EMT training at the former Pimlico Junior High School on numerous occasions, and especially recently, as I have had opportunity to be in that facility, which is, of course, a training facility for both the firefighters and police, and the emergency medical services personnel. One thing is that has disturbed me about the logo for the police is simply that one of the four things that it says on your logo for your training purposes, it says, best friend, worst enemy. And I just want to say to you, Mr. Commissioner, that as an elder, as the progeny of Frederick Douglass, I say to you that you get more with honey than with vinegar. And if you train your officers preeminently in terms of kindness as opposed to the opposite, we're going to get much better results from the citizens of Baltimore. And just like I deal with my customers, you're dealing with your customers, which are all the citizens of Baltimore. And I ask that you look into that.
Okay, let me ask the commissioner response, because we only have a few minutes left for the commissioner before he has to run, and Carl Stokes is coming in. So, commissioner.
And thank you for sharing that. Not much more of an elder than me, trust me. So we're probably close out of the same generation. However, I think when recruits come into an academy, whether through icons or whether through messages, whether through buildings as a whole, as we have to set standards in the proper way. I will take a look into our sign, as you said. I think you make some very valuable points and worthwhile points. Also, what we're trying to do is get out of that academy structure that we're in currently, because I think it doesn't set the tone for what I want when our recruits are coming in. So we're looking for a new location. We're trying to enter into a partnership with another institute that is constructed properly, so that we have training facilities and we have locations that we can do overall. So we're looking at ICON, but the bigger picture is making sure we set the tone and set the standard as we walk, have our recruits walk in. I like to probably have our icons that tell about our five pillars, whether dealing with gangs and guns and engaging the community and actionable intelligence and data sharing and ethics and integrity, to replace some of the signs that you're talking about. So we'll move to kind of change that.
And finally, there were some tweets here about the article written by Justin Fenton and whether or not that stop and frisk is going to change because of what you discovered there. The article they wrote talked about people who kind of questioned the way it was done in the case when you stopped the gentleman that was.
That's because Justin Fenton only printed a short amount of information. We sat down with him two times, once with Deputy Commissioner Rodriguez, shared at least about an hour's conversation with him to clearly explain it. And the article that came out wasn't clear then, to which I had about a 30-second soundbite or 40-second soundbite to try to get in a very complicated legal theory and try to make it overly simplified so he didn't get all the information that he had. We went back and explained to him multiple times through phone calls that there was more data, more information. He didn't put that in the story. So I'm not going to address the story other than the fact that we've spent a lot of time trying to address a complicated legal theory with him that falls into confirmation of what the law is. Terry versus Ohio has been around since 1968. Every police officer comes in, that's a basic that you know. Miranda is the other one that is the basics that you know from the foundation. And I've been doing this for about 33 years, and I've never had a misstep on what I do and how I do it along those lines. Our policy is pretty clear on what we do. The standard's pretty clear. It meets every legal standard that we have, and so I don't see that as an issue. I see it more as trying to communicate our information through filters.
Commissioner Anthony Batts, thank you for joining us. I'm looking forward to having a more frequent visit with you. I appreciate that you all have been willing to do that, and look forward to having you here very soon back for more conversations, and thank you so much.
Thank you, sir.
Commissioner Anthony Batts has been with us. We can take a very brief break, and then we'll be joined by Councilman Carl Stokes to talk about where the money is in terms of our property taxes. Stay with us. We'll be right back.